All right, welcome to Highly Questionable. I got Katie Nolan on one side. I got Mike Golic Jr. on the other in a t-shirt that I can't think of a way to ridicule. Sorry, y'all, I'm slipping.
Football season starts soon. We'll be back to Notre Dame tease. This is Game of Thrones.
Oh, I get it now.
Is John Mara right to be sick and tired of taunting in the NFL?
All right, so one thing that the NFL has taught me, you want to know what really gets on my nerves? Second-generation money. Second-generation money always tend to be out here messing something up. Have you seen what it's been for the Giants since they went to the second generation of Maras? It hadn't been the same. Y'all used to be classy. But to make you look like you are more classy, we got John Mara, who is on the Rules Committee, talking about why it is that the NFL is trying to crack down on taunting.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we discuss every year in the Competition Committee. We get kind of sick and tired of the taunting that does go on from time to time on the field. We've tried to balance the sportsmanship with allowing the players to have fun, and there's always a fine line there, but none of us like to see that, and it's just a question of whether you can have rules that can be enforced and without taking the fun out of the game too. But nobody wants to see a player taunting another player. I know I certainly don't, and I think the rest of the members of the Competition Committee feel the same way.
Hey there, buddy. Be careful with those absolutes. Yeah. Like, I actually enjoy seeing taunting on the field. To me, the issue is you have to get rid of taunting because you've gotten rid of fighting. Like, if you're not allowed to fight somebody, then the taunting has nothing to keep it in line. And so now the referees wind up being the ones who have to do it. This is my only question for him. Who are these people who had such a problem with it? Is it really just the 32 owners? Because I'd never gotten the feeling in watching the last 15 years of the NFL that people were really clamoring for them to rein it in even more. They've done a pretty decent job of this up until this point. This isn't a sport that has a bunch of people in each other's faces gratuitously, at least not as far as I have noticed. I don't know the fans who had such a problem with this and then demanded change. That's what gets me about the owners in this. They're acting like somebody demanded this when instead they're just going to create a situation where referee calls on these are going to be a story for a month, and then they're going to have to dial it back because people are mad that they reacted to something that no one asked them to react to.
Right. Like, this is like a lot of the other decisions that get made and really pro sports, any sort of business in general. This is only a handful of people that are kind of dictating how this goes. Right. So I just want it made abundantly clear that this, like a lot of other committees, is largely useless because the decision is going to be made by a handful of people who claim to be operating in the best interest of others when really they're just putting their own insecurities or proclivities or however you want to phrase it on display here. Like, hell, NFL Films runs entire specials yes. on the best trash talkers in the history of the league. So I think there are plenty of people who want just the opposite of what John Mara is describing.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, there's aspects of football. I think we all know if you're a football fan, you sort of just have to accept the parts of it that you know you don't like. And what taunting is the part that was like, this is okay. This is the, like, okay version of showing this aggression. And like Bomani said, it's never really been bad. Obviously, there are extremes in which when taunting, you can say certain words or use certain language, which is something that I think we all would agree is not encouraged or something that we want to see happening in the league. But it's not, at least to my knowledge, something that we've had a huge issue with in this league, even when compared to like other leagues in this country. So it's very confusing to me when owners want to write respect into the rules. It feels very icky, and it feels like you have to act a certain way to represent the way I'd like you to look, when really the reality of the situation is it's weird to me if you're a competitive person, like, I don't know, a successful businessman who owns a football team, and you don't enjoy the act of watching a little comeuppance. You don't enjoy the taunting, the moments where, especially the one that made them think about doing this was that issue with Tyreek Hill and Antoine Winfield Jr. from the Bucks in the Super Bowl last year. That's like, you get what you give. And that's the moment they say that they were like, we really need to crack down on this. That's the least we need to crack down on of all the things I saw. That is how the game works. It's the economy of what happens on the field. And it's just weird to me when owners act like they don't understand that. And they're just like, be nice to each other.
Well, that's because second generation money struggles with the idea of accomplishment. It's not their fault. They wound up in a wonderful situation that doesn't necessarily require them to have to do very much. But the feeling of overcoming and then celebrating it, What that man know about that?
Yeah, good
know
point.
About as much as he knows about that as he knows about grabbing the rim on a basketball court. Because it looked like he ain't never done that before.
What does it tell you that the T-Wolves are allegedly the only serious suitor for Ben Simmons?
Okay, we all know Ben Simmons cannot play for the Philadelphia 76ers next season, right? If you need that explained to you, I don't know what to tell you. He can't do that. So the Sixers, trying to see what you can get for him around the league. And a report from John Krasinski of The Athletic says the only team that's been like seriously engaged with Philadelphia about this is the Timberwolves, right? Problem is, I mean, they're the Timberwolves. What they got that you want? Like, you just stop and think about this. The Timberwolves like, yo, we'd like to trade you something. We know what that is. You're trying to pass something off on us that you want to get out of your house because they're not going to trade Towns. They're not going to trade Russell. All they got are the other Timberwolves, and they're not trading Anthony Edwards. Now, what does this say about Ben Simmons? This is actually kind of damning to me if there's only one team that's really on the line to get a player that's this talented. And the reason I say that is sports leagues are always full of people who firmly believe that they are able to fix someone as absurdly talented as Ben Simmons is. But there also is an understanding that that person will also have to do a lot to fix themselves in the course of that process. And so when I look at how all of this is playing out, this sounds like a league that doesn't think that Ben Simmons wants to do the things that'll be necessary to make it worth it to trade for Ben Simmons. So what does that turn into on opening night? I have no idea because he can't play in Philadelphia no more.
Well, he can't, but he might have to for a little bit. Like, he can't play in Philadelphia for the whole season. There's no way in hell that can happen. But what do we have to have happen in the process then? You got to erase the stain of that god-awful playoff finish that Ben Simmons just finished up with. And how can you do that? It's the reverse Harden. It's going out and performing so well in that early month of the season that everyone who thought your talent might be something they can work with all of a sudden starts to look at you longingly again and say, oh, yeah, that's what we were looking at. And we got a little bit like Ben Simmons, if he's got to show up back in Philadelphia at the start of the season, better be firing from distance. He better be shooting every jump shot as much from beyond the arc as humanly possible, because he's just got to show these people a little bit of something to match all the rest of that ability. So that seems like it's unfortunately for them, fortunately for all of us, going to be the train wreck that starts the season.
It feels to me like this is one of those situations where we've started to be able to have the conversation about mental health and athletes. It's like a thing that we're like dipping our toe in the water. But when it comes to situations like this, it's not really the thing we talk about. And it's the first thing I think of, because to me, watching Ben Simmons, and obviously I'm no basketball expert, but watching Ben Simmons's fear of taking a shot in a big game strikes me as something happening in his head more than his body. And I want to be very clear when I say that I'm not alleging to know anything about Ben Simmons. I'm not even diagnosing him with anything. I'm saying that talking to someone, which all NBA teams do now have, right? Their own therapist. Talking to somebody about what you felt in that moment and what caused you to jam up like that, it sucks. But if you can push through that conversation, you can find the answer on the other side, which can then help you to turn that around. Because Ben Simmons is somebody we've said is very talented. There are people who sit on this very show and die on his hill. So he's got stuff. He just needs to put it together and make it work. And so this, I guess, is my advice. If he does have to stay, God forbid, in Philadelphia and play basketball there next season, consider speaking to a sports psychologist.
You try to tell this man Pablo believes in you, so yeah, it's going to be okay. That's not
it helps
going
me.
To get
him. It's the speech I give myself in the morning. Good. Pablo that's Torre believes in you. Go out there and do it.
That's good. Now, I look at this with the Sixers. You think about this. They had the number one overall pick 2 years in a row, and they're going to have to get rid of both of those guys for pennies on the dollar, right? This whole thing that's going on, whether you want to call it the process or whatever, right? All this time and everything that happened, Markelle Fultz had whatever the issue was with him, and they had to give him away, basically. Ben Simmons, they're not going to be able to get anything back close to his level of talent. Some of that is just bad luck for the Sixers, man. Damn.
Are you here for Stephen Cohen calling out the Mets?
All right, so one thing you need to understand about this world, Nobody's made $1 billion by caring about people's feelings. Not even Oprah when it really comes down to it, right? Like, she sells it very well, but it's just hard to make that kind of money being a nice person. Steve Cohen is the owner of the Mets, and he has lots of billions that he did not get by being nice to people. Now, he owns a team that is 24th in the league in OPS, and in their last series was 2-for-27 with runners in scoring position for an average of 74. That's how you wind up with a Major League Baseball owner putting up a tweet like this. It's hard to understand how professional hitters can be this unproductive. The best teams have a more disciplined approach. The slugging and OPS numbers don't lie. I am assuming he has the manager's phone number. He has the general manager's phone number. He could talk to anybody, but no, he wanted the people to understand, I am just as mad as you, and I'm rich. And it always means more when a rich person says it. This is still horrible business for him to do, but a sign that the Mets might be really entertaining for those of us who have no investment in their success.
It is a good reminder from Bomani to always remember the audience everyone's speaking to, right? Because in a lot of instances, when we see a coach come out and blast a player in the media, generally what goes on behind closed doors is that message has already been delivered and not received in the way that they like. And so they double back out. They shout it in public. So now you got more people coming at the players, coming at whoever they're trying to get that message across to. And so generally I look and say, I'm trusting that you did the right thing and tried to handle this behind closed doors first. Steve Cohen's not living with any of those relationships on a day-to-day basis. He didn't have to walk down into the locker room and see any of those guys or care about what they think, because see prior point about him being rich. And so we get to this point where he's going to go out here and say exactly what all his fans in the Mets fan base want to hear. So does it make it any less objectively lame? No, this is pretty JV that a billionaire owner's turning Twitter into the message boards, but there's not much any of us can do about that, except watch the Mets do what they do. Go from, I believe, a 78% chance, according to FanGraphs, to make the postseason before the All-Star break, down to something around 16% now. Because, man, there are a few surer bets in sports than a Mets collapse.
Yeah, we put a lot of value in a person who tells it like it is, who says what we're all thinking. But we never remember that if you're powerful, rich, any of these, you then, it's not the same. You're not risking the same amount of thing to tell it like it is. It's very easy to tell it like it is from an ivory tower where no one's going to yell at you and there's not really going to be any repercussions. And if you want to sell, if you want to endear yourself to a fan base, your fan base, Mets fans, I think the best way to do that is by complaining in an informed way about the Mets. But to the point that you both made is like, you're the one who can fix it, at least more than I can fix it. I mean, I log on to Twitter because I know there's nothing I can do about anything, so I might as well complain about it. These are people who have connections to the thing, and you go on and you complain. It feels like logging on to Twitter to complain about my family. It's like, yeah, everybody can commiserate maybe and laugh, but at the end of the day, it's my problem and I gotta go fix it.
Up next on HQ.
There are some cities that really take it personally when you say something about them. Like, 9 out of the top 10 are in the Midwest. They really, really don't appreciate it.
Time to play the game that doesn't think Ben Simmons is gonna wanna live in Minnesota. Do you question?
You might be a Prince fan. You give us topics and events, we question them.
Do you question if it's cool that Jalen Green is still throwing shade at Detroit?
All right, so there was a time where Jalen Green said that he wanted to live in Detroit. That time was when they had the number one overall pick, and he wanted them to take him with the number one overall pick because he wanted to be drafted before everybody else. Well, this is him right after he got drafted by the Rockets, and all the love for Detroit is starting to dissipate.
Send a message to all those teams that do not have Jalen Green on their squad.
I'm sorry for y'all, because I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep getting better every day. I'm going to keep perfecting my craft. And every time I step on that floor, at Detroit especially, so I'm coming.
Okay, so that's where he was immediately after the draft. Then he does an interview with Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports, and he throws more shade at Detroit. He talks about how he'd rather be in Houston because, you know, you go outside in Detroit, there's nothing for you to do. And I'm here to tell you, young man, the next time you go to Detroit, remember that you said that and do not step outside. There are some cities that really take it personally when you say something about them. Like, 9 out of the top 10 are in the Midwest. They really, really don't appreciate it. And they really don't appreciate it in Detroit. So, like, you got beef with the Pistons. If I were you, I would specify that my beef was with the Pistons. Mm-hmm. I personally would not want to be part of the everybody in Detroit versus everybody.
Nope, that's not the way to go, which is why way back in yesteryear, when young Mike Gold Jr. was getting ready to tag along as a redshirt freshman to a bowl game, and it was between the Hawaii Bowl and the Motor City Bowl, I made it abundantly clear that I was just a fan of the Hawaii Bowl versus the Motor City Bowl, not a fan of Hawaii over Detroit. I have no beef with Detroit. I want no beef with Detroit. It was purely a matter of just liking one bowl game and what that particular bowl game had to offer more than the other. So, Detroit, you guys are great. I'm sure somebody is going to come enjoy playing in your city very, very soon. Mm-hmm.
And I think the issue here is just a little bit of pettiness. It's just a little bit of pettiness that I'd maybe, for your own benefit, turn down a little bit. You went second. Second is okay. Second is great. It's better than okay. It's just not first. And I get it. You've got that drive to be the first pick. But, like, you never had to say you wanted to live somewhere you didn't want to live. That makes you seem like you're phony. Just say you wanted to go number one. And then you would have dealt with the fact that you were wherever you ended up. This isn't a Detroit point. It's a point about the draft. I've never been to Detroit in my life. And I don't have opinions on things I've never, you know, interacted with.
Yeah, it's part of the packet they give you before you get in the draft, though, that you lie and say you want to live in whatever place it is that people are talking about. Like, that is a requirement. You have to say that. You can't just be like, hey, you know, I live there for work.
Time to play the game that has a hard time believing it's only Wednesday. See? Or no? See? That's a Friday head tilt.
There you go. You tell us what's on television tonight. We'll tell you if we're intrigued.
On YouTube, Chips with Draymond Green.
All right. So Draymond Green has an interview show, which is like, he's better at interviewing than any of us are at basketball, which kind of puts us, come on, man, you've got enough money, don't you? Mm-hmm. Anyway, he's interviewing Kevin Durant here. Kevin Durant, right? The guy that we weren't sure he actually liked.
How much did our argument against the Clippers drive you to ultimately lead the Warriors? What brought you back to Golden State for year three was just the opportunity to three-peat. You have no kids. Why? How you deal with the media, is that just who you grew into? What do you make of people's reaction to you responding to fans? Do you have any regret knowing that we probably would have won 5 more championships?
Yo! Is a series of fastballs, all of them, like, right? Why don't you have kids? Because I got good reflexes. Go look, are you intrigued?
I am very intrigued because these are the kind of interviews you can only get when you've been in a locker room with somebody. When you've been, like, he's already done all the hard stuff, Kevin Durant here, the chest-to-chest, nose-to-nose argument style stuff. So this is nothing for Draymond here. I am very intrigued. He is way too good at this.
Katie, are you intrigued?
You know what? I am. But I think that Draymond should understand my competitive fire, which is what's going to come out right now. If you make a promo for your interview show that's entirely comprised of the questions you asked and none of the answers that were given to you, then it kind of tells you what the point of the show is.
That's salt. I just feel like this is
the point of the show of an interview is to learn about the other person, not to be like, how good was this that I did? Okay. Right. And so I'm not that out of principle. I'm going to watch it. It's going to be great.
On YouTube, All the Smoke.
Another one.
Oh, more guys trying to run us off our jobs. Here it is. It is Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson, and they are talking with Carmelo Anthony.
I'm going to tell you what, man. To this day, I still think about that.
Really?
Yeah, hell yeah. Because I'm like, they promised me. You know what I'm saying? Yo, we taking you.
Did they?
I'm talking all the way up to draft day. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm there, I think they win another one.
Ooh, I think so too.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't jump out there and say we 3-peat football. I think we go back to back if I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
We drove from B-more to Philly. Me and my man Bay, we drove from B-more to Philly, man, to go watch. It was Detroit versus Philly. Mm-hmm. And Larry Brown had already took the job at Detroit, but he was still coaching Philly. So we're in the back, and he's like, yo, we taking you. Like, we taking you. So I, you know, I'm driving back up 95, like, yo, we going to Detroit. The whole hood is, we Detroit.
Detroit.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, that still sit with me to this day.
Two things on this discussion. One, why do we always forget that Larry Brown coached that team, which means that he would not actually play Carmelo, even if he was on it, and he would have been miserable throughout that year. And number two, that is not the All the Smoke set, right? I don't know what that is. That looked like it might be at Melo's house. And while the show was called All the Smoke, it looked like Melo told him, hey, y'all got to take that outside. We can't have no burn on this couch. Gold, if you intrigued.
Yeah, Melo's jacket there did not look like it was a jacket that was going to absorb that kind of smoke and be something that he was comfortable with. I'm more so intrigued because I saw a sweatshirt that I thought it said grown men don't share pants. And then I saw what it really said. Mm-mm. Remember what podcast Mm-mm. I was listening to.
Mm-hmm. Now, say that sweatshirt, by the way, that's something I'm thinking that only rich people say. Like, no, get your own.
Yeah, hey, I was looking intrigued. At that. That was the only thing I was going to say. I am intrigued by the sweatshirt. I'm intrigued by the fashion. One reason being I have not figured out how to wear socks. There are people that can make socks look cool. Socks look so dumb when I wear them. And I don't know if this is a personal thing, but some of y'all are out here making socks look like a cool fashion accessory. And they always make me look like I missed the bus for middle school. I don't know why. I don't know what's up. But I agree with you on that sweatshirt. I guess I'm not a grown man.
All right, that is our show. Check out Katie Nolan on Sports. It's a podcast with a question mark. Mike Golic Jr., 4-7 Eastern, Shanae and Golic, ESPN Radio.
Listen to the right time of Bomani Jones. I gave you time to jump in, Golic.
About to say, I laid out love.
For you. Oh, sure.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.